Welcome everybody to the next episode of Fire and Wire, and today is all things spin out and innovation. And I'm absolutely delighted that joining me this afternoon are two fabulous women. We have Mairi Gibbs, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Oxford University Innovation. Welcome, Mairi.
Thank you very much.
And we have Lily Busman, who is the principal at Oxford Science Enterprises. Welcome, Lily.
It's great to be here.
Before we get to it, I want to know how you got to this place. Mairi, let's start with you. What was your journey to joining Oxford University Innovation?
So I started out as a chemist. I did my first degree here at New College and then a PhD at Bristol. And then I spent a few years in the fine chemicals industry. And then I found my way into this world of university knowledge exchange, technology transfer. I came back to Oxford in 2002, and I've been in a whole variety of jobs, but always in this innovation space ever since.
I mean, that's sort of 21 years pretty much then of actually being in a very interesting phase of our evolution. You've been really at the vanguard of it. So looking forward to getting into that a little bit more. Lily, tell me about your journey.
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Germany, but then came here for my undergraduate back in 2011. For my sins, not in the sciences. Actually, I studied PPE at Magdalen. From there, I started my career in investing in London. But when OSE was launched in 2015, just got too tempted, moved back.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, it's brilliant to have you both join us here. So as you know, this week we published the report that I've been co-chairing for the government on the role of how we can drive economic growth in Britain through our British universities and specifically through their contribution to innovation and creating spin-outs with very much a focus on the more commercial side of the spin-out opportunities. It's been a really interesting journey for me to have gone on for the past 10 months to produce that report and get to meet all the stakeholders from founders to investors to the university tech transfer offices, etc. But let me hear what you think of it now that the report's out and published and getting good responses, as far as I've been told. Mairi, I'm keen to hear what you think of the report and where you see it presenting some opportunities for us.
Sure. The really fantastic thing about the report is that it recognises a lot of really good practice in the UK at converting our world-class science base into spin-out companies. Of course, spin-outs aren't solely the preserve of science and medical sciences. There are some social sciences and humanities as well. But the majority at this point are from the science areas. So it recognises a lot of good practice, and it really affirms the importance of this route for venture creation to the UK economy as a means of generating new high growth industry for the UK for the years to come. So that's fantastic. In a bit of technical detail, it endorses the University Spin-Out Investment Terms Guide, which was prepared by a group of world leading universities, including some from the States, some from Europe, and a pile of investors that set out a landing zone. And most of Oxford's processes are already well within that. So really brilliant to see that affirmed as a good way to structure spin-out guides. And there's calls for more proof of concept funding, which of course is always a really, really helpful step before you get to the point of forming a venture to help to de-risk that opportunity. So loads of really positive stuff and some suggestions for some things we can do better as well, which I'm looking forward to working on.
Yeah, no, well, it's good to hear that, because I think, you know, part of the journey was and the ambition was to try and see where we could share good practice and to celebrate, you know, and I think the journey's been one very much where we've been able to bust a few myths around how well we're doing, or not well was the criticism, but actually to really put on the map just how successful British universities have been in this space, and then what further opportunities there are, and how we can, if we share that good practice, we can really take it to the next level. I did one of the media interviews I did, I was surprised to be asked, what is a spin-out? So we probably should not assume that everybody listening knows what on earth we're talking about. So why don't we start with some definitions? Lily, why don't you tell us your definition of what a spin-out is? And then maybe, Mairi, I'll come back to you to say that, you know, what are some of the other ways that we can commercialise, if you like, our activities? But Lily?
At a very basic level, a spin-out is a company created around a piece of transformative research. In the case of OSE, that would be a spin-out that's spun out from one of the STEM departments, so broadly covering MPLS and the MSD division.
So just so people are aware, so STEM, science, technology, engineering, medicine, and our two great divisions of STEM would be maths and physical life sciences and medical sciences, and OSE being the shorthand for Oxford Science Enterprises. So some sort of IP that we then realise that we could maybe commercialise and we create a company from. Mairi, that's not the only thing that we do, though, when we commercialise our intellectual property.
Well, that's right. And my definition would be formed on the basis of Oxford research or expertise, because sometimes the intellectual property is really quite intangible, but this can still be a great basis for a business there. I also include in my definition that the university has a shareholding, because of course companies are created to exploit good business opportunities all the time. And the defining thing about is it a spin-out company or not is actually the university has to have an interest in it. And it's a real strength in Oxford. We are regularly at the top of the league tables for numbers of ventures created in the UK. And this year we celebrated our 300th company formed. And, you know, half of those have been formed in the last 8 years, which is really fantastic. But more broadly, there are a whole variety of different routes for achieving knowledge exchange. It doesn't have to follow an entrepreneurial pathway, and we can maybe talk a bit more about that.
Now, we didn't always spin out. I mean, I remember I've been here my whole career, and we would often patent things, and it was very nice. It gave you a warm feeling that you had something that was patentable, but we then did absolutely nothing with it. It just sat in a drawer. So, Lily, tell us what really enabled us as academics here in this university start to actually realise in a significant way the ability to commercialise some of that intellectual property or those ideas that we thought could contribute to a company or could be licensed to one of the big companies out there.
Yeah, so I think really to have a flourishing spin-out ecosystem, you need three things: top quality science, talent, and capital. So I think it's totally inarguable that Oxford always had fantastic science. You know, it's now the 8th year running, the world's best research university. But what I think there was a real shortage of was deep pools of capital that really finance these opportunities to scale. And in 2015, the university actually entered a very unique partnership with OUI and Oxford University to raise a dedicated pool of capital, just over £860 million now, exclusively focused on investing, building, and spinning out companies from Oxford. So that's seen a really tremendous uptick in activity.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely critical. And you can sort of see from the graphs, can't you, when you look at the growth of the companies, as you say, 300th company just last year, 2025 a year now being spun out from the university, and all started from that visionary investment and having that capital, as you say. Going forward, though, the challenges are, how do we do more? How do we grow it? Because I sense a great entrepreneurial thirst amongst undergraduates, graduates, our faculty to do more of this. And so to create the sort of innovation ecosystem that I can see possible in the broad region of Oxford and Oxfordshire requires more capital, it requires more skilled workforces, it requires the ability to grow in terms of planning and the infrastructure. And although we've been focusing a lot on STEM, you know, one of the great strengths here too, I mean, you did PPEs, we got great humanities and social sciences and terrific creative arts, you know, across Britain as well. So if we're going to create an innovation ecosystem that's fit for Britain, not just a copycat Silicon Valley, so something really special, that also has social enterprise, you know, and more NGO, non-governmental organisation type models. Mari, maybe you could just, you know, give your thoughts about where you see the excitement around doing that, where you see some of the challenges, and what is it we need to do in order to make sure that we can fulfil that vision that I really do believe we can make here.
I agree. And, you know, I think the thing that's fantastic about Oxford's innovation ecosystem is the sort of concentration cluster of this extraordinary breadth across so many disciplines in Oxford University. But of course, we also have our research institutes down at Harwell and Culham and elsewhere along our region. And so there's particular strengths in space and fusion energy, race automotive, incredible life science, of course, and proximity to London. So those are some ingredients that help. But, you know, as Lily said, you need people and you need the money to help those people to execute on a great business plan. And they've got to have space to be able to actually build a company. So we're thinking quite hard about all of those different aspects.
As you say, you know, those national labs, I mean, if you look at the sort of 50-mile radius around Oxford, it's pretty impressive, you know, what actually is here. And I think if we could be a bit more strategic about what we're building and where, you know, I do believe we can create something that would be unrivaled anywhere in the world. You're both students, okay, and you've stayed and you've come back into the ecosystem, which is great, but that's quite rare. More often than not, if you don't stay in the university, you tend to leave and you go to London or you go abroad. And it would be great if we could hold on to more of the great talent that we educate and develop here. And by creating new types of jobs, I think that's another opportunity. And I also see that this is a way that we can create more, I call them porous careers, maybe for academics, where you could go a little bit more in and out of your maybe private spin-out company back into the public sector university, have joint posts, all different ways that we can think a bit more creatively about how we can create interesting career structures once we've built this amazing ecosystem.
Absolutely. And if we get it right, you know, around the Oxford area, there should be this rich tapestry of tiny, growing, scale-up, big companies, maybe some huge corporates. It may be sort of obvious to think about the people who can do the really clever coding for machine learning or the, you know, incredible life science technical type of work. But these businesses need managers, cleaners, plumbers, landscape architects, accountants, lawyers, yeah, everything that's needed. And so there's a really rich variety of roles that are available. And if we can increase that employment base, that surely is a good thing for the region.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for our school children as well, you know, just further, you know, more interesting jobs, you know, hopefully for them to grow into. So Lily, you know, one of the things that struck us in the review and I've observed and in thinking about, you know, creating this vision for Oxfordshire, we need, as Murray says, people with all those other skills. And I guess some of the challenges we've got is, are there enough of those people here? I mean, we've just recruited a wonderful new CEO of OSE, Ed Bussey, and that's fantastic. And he's settling in just superbly well. But getting great talent like that in and enough of that talent to help run our companies is not easy. So what do you see as the challenge there, and how can we mitigate that? And how can the university help, you know, get that workforce here that we need if we are going to develop and grow these companies?
I think at different levels of the career, it's going to be different solutions. I definitely saw in my cohort of people graduating from university, there was this kind of conveyor belt of the most ambitious people to, you know, move straight out to Silicon Valley, build a company there. I think we really need to focus on capturing that really ambitious early career talent to give them an opportunity and a reason to stay. The last two decades have been very much about software, and Silicon Valley has been a big paradigm for that. But if we look forward 10 to 20 years, I think the things that people get really excited and passionate about, for very good reason, are actually things that Oxford's research base is really, really good at, which is physical things in the life sciences affecting human and planetary health. So I think that's what I would say for the younger generation. In terms of the more established career person, whether that's on the commercial side or technical side, I think it's making sure that, again, they can see that they're not losing out on a career opportunity by moving their family back to the UK or moving to Oxford, which has an incredibly high quality of life, really good educational opportunities for children, and a safe and green and only 50 minutes away from London.
Well, those are great plugs. And I hope anybody listening out there from our alumni base who are maybe out, encouraged and incentivized to return back to the mothership and to the ranch and help contribute to this next phase of our evolution, because we really do need, I think, that sort of talent pool of the people that have got skill sets to grow the companies. You know, my experience is that academics are good at generating the IP, and sometimes they're great at the commercialization, but generally they want to stay in the labs or they want to stay in the departments and develop the next set of ideas. And so having those people who can pick up those companies and run with them, with the academics still involved, is going to be essential, isn't it? And that's where the country, I think more generally, and the government needs to think about what can we do to incentivize people to, you know, come into our ecosystem and again, do well. The scaling up phase of a company. So we've spoken a little about the spin out. You've got an idea, you patent it, you spin out a company, you're off and running. But then there's the valley of death, and then there's the sort of next phase. Could you talk me through that period? Maybe, Mari, come back to you and think about what the challenges are around getting through some of the tough times of scaling up.
If you think about the journey that a business needs to take from that tiny little startup that's maybe just a two or three people in the very early days with some seed capital. You know, we're very fortunate in Oxford with OSE and availability to that seed capital. It's more straightforward for us here than it is in some parts of the country to access that seed capital. But as the business grows, it's going to need to develop whatever product it is that it's taking to market into something that looks like a prototype, into something that's tested with some early customers. Then they've got to think about how they're going to make it, how they're going to scale up. So typically, a spin-out company would go through a series of investment rounds, seed, and then Series A, Series B, then growth capital. And these are sort of steadily larger and larger amounts of money. And what we find in this country, unfortunately, is that sometimes the access to that scaling capital is not as easy as it might be. And so some businesses do fail at that stage. So some of the reforms that the government's working on, hopefully, will help to plug that gap.
It's really striking to me. I've been out to the West Coast several times, you know, just this year. And, you know, the availability of both talent to grow the companies, you know, people with real experience of running businesses, you know, the capital opportunities are just enormous. So we really do need to address this in this country if we want to realise what is an incredible pipeline of, as you say, intellectual property and ideas there. Lily, anything to add about that sort of scaling up phase and the valley of death?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is seeing other people doing it before you. And I think Oxford Nanopore being one of the earlier spin-outs to come out of Oxford, now being listed on the London Stock Exchange, being worth several billion pounds, is an incredibly big thing for people looking ahead of the road and having maybe just raised a seed or series A and thinking to themselves, you know what, we're going to take it all the way. It's not just us being crazy, but we have real evidence that we can build British champions.
You're so right. And, you know, having that visibility and those role models, we just need them, don't we, around, because they are inspiring. I know you guys have been very active in training and getting the message out there and helping in that sort of cultural change. And I know particularly, I've been impressed by what you've done around the fact that we don't have good diversity in our founders. For me, it feels a little bit like where we were in academia 20 years ago, in that we don't have enough women founders. And when we do, they don't have enough investment given them. They tend to be more on the social enterprise side of things, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe, Mari, you could tell us a little bit about what OUI's been doing to help address that.
This term, the university has launched its Inspire Hub for Entrepreneurship. That's Inspire with an E. And that's a fantastic program of training, events to get inspiration, speakers, build a business, to get those fundamental skills of entrepreneurship up and running. There's a pitch at the pub, sessions, a whole manner of different things. So anybody who's interested in dipping a toe in the water, I would really encourage you to check that out. And that's a means of coordinating and aligning all of the different support activities that there are through the university. And OUI is really delighted and proud to be a part of that. Alongside of that, we have the IDEA program, which is championed by Professor Kylie Vincent from chemistry. And she's running some really interesting programs to support female entrepreneurs as they start their journey. And we've also been doing some work to try and actually understand our data. How many women do we have in our founders? Do we see a representative proportion of women making invention disclosures? Do they have a different experience as they go through that commercialization journey? And we couldn't answer any of those questions at all. We're starting to be able to. And that's a really important part of it. Because once we understand what the situation is, then we can start to design some interventions and maybe change the way that we're describing these activities to try and make them more accessible.
Absolutely. No, I'm really inspired, forgive the pun, for what you're doing there around the idea. I think it really is a terrific thing. And it's so important. As you say, you can't mitigate the problems unless you know what they are and have the humility to know that we're not getting it fully right. Lily, what's been your experience? Does that match your experience in terms of the lack of female founders coming forward and then maybe, you know, their aspiration around what's possible for them?
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen that. We want to make a real effort making sure that our shortlists are gender balanced and balanced in all other criteria of diversity. It is incredibly hard, though, just to start with the world as it is. And again, it points towards making the intervention as early as is possible. So one initiative that I think is quite worth mentioning in that context is the Oxford Seed Fund, which is a student-led venture fund hosted out of the business school, which we've supported with £2.5 million to get students to work with other students on ideas. And that's both to encourage them to think about going on to entrepreneurship, but also here's a low-stakes way to be a student who might not have thought of themselves as a future venture capitalist to play around with it and see that other people who are like you are engaging with it.
It's great. And I know that you're funding PhD studentships as well. So it's really great, the sort of investment back in. So it's terrific that. And I think those seed funds, and I'm glad you've mentioned the business school, because again, I think there's a real opportunity to work across our university sector, more with our business schools, who are, of course, training the next generation of business leaders, and to think about how, again, we can maybe hold on to some of them in our local ecosystems to help contribute to some of the growth of these companies. So I see some real opportunities there that, again, going forwards, we can maybe realise a bit better. So we've spoken a lot about the excitement of it, which I think we all share, and what the benefits are both to the inventor and the founder, and then, you know, to the British economy and obviously to the world through what we're creating here. But what are the benefits back to the people here? So for our staff and students.
Sure. So it's really important that there are benefits that flow back to all of the individuals that were involved and to the department and to the broader institution, because that's what helps to keep the wheels greased for future wonderful things to come out. So it's really important to remember that the financial returns, fantastic though they are, can't be relied upon every time. They're likely to be very long term and quite lumpy, by which I mean nothing for many years and then a big lump all at once. But then when we do make a financial reward, then the flows are laid out through the university's regulations so that all of the individuals that help to contribute to the IP are rewarded. The department has a share, the central university has a share, and that central share flows into the strategic research fund so that it can go back around in this wonderful flywheel mechanism to seed new fantastic research.
Yeah, no, it is so important. Lily, I mean, maybe you could sort of put some figures on. Let's hear the numbers about what that sort of return on investment has been.
Yeah, in terms of Oxford's direct stakes and indirect stakes through OSE, the total value of those holdings to the university is about £160 million, which has been created between 2015 and today, where it's worth saying that we actually think that the maturity for these companies is going to be seen 10 to 12 years out from now. So I think hopefully that's going to grow a fair bit more. Coming back to Oxford Nanopore, which obviously is older than OSE, you know, I think today they are one of the biggest funders of PhDs in the chemistry department. So also you can see that sponsorship coming back. OSE is sponsoring 80 PhDs over the next 5 years. And then to just state the obvious, I think, you know, it's an incredibly powerful way for researchers to have impact. I think just looking at the Oxford vaccine, which I think was in the end 3 billion people who had the Oxford vaccine. I don't think any of us were sitting here a few years back thinking that there would be one invention coming from Oxford touching so many lives around the globe.
Yeah, I think that's a really important comment to make. You know, we're focusing a bit because the report was focusing on, you know, the commercial side. But for me, it is about the impact we make on the world and for the betterment of society. It's great, as you say, we need the commercial activity because that helps provide the oil to keep the engine running. And it's very clear that is immediately impactful back on the university and seeding and developing more. But it's just the amazing way those companies contribute in all sorts of ways of, again, health and wealth creation and job opportunities. And that's got to be a great thing, hasn't it, for us?
Exactly so. And, you know, we did a survey of our spin-outs in preparation for our impact reporting this year. And of the spin-outs that responded to our survey, 90% of them are working directly towards at least one of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
That's a fantastic point. You mentioned, Murray, just a little about licensing. And I just want to make sure that our listeners are clear about the sort of two main routes. We've spoken, obviously, a lot about the spin-outs. But let's define licensing and where those opportunities are.
Licensing is where you give the rights to use a piece of intellectual property to a company that's already out there existing in the world. And it's sort of like hiring a car. The owner, the university in this case, retains ownership, but the person who's hiring it gets to use it. And there's some conditions associated with it and some money changes hands. And that was the mechanism for the university's partnership with AstraZeneca for the COVID vaccine that we've spoken about. But, you know, we do an awful lot of licensing. We have a huge portfolio of health outcomes questionnaires, for example, that are used by clinicians to monitor the stage of progression and prognosis for your dodgy knee or dodgy hip, for example. And that's a pure licensing model based on copyright. So licensing is a really strong activity for us. There's a lot of noise about spinning out, but actually that's one pathway out of many. We also do a lot of consultancy work, 650 different contracts last year. Sometimes that's run through the department, for example. Sometimes maybe in the humanities, they might be advising film companies on the history of art to go into something about Renaissance masterpieces. So that there's all these different routes. So I do believe that it's possible for any researcher who wants to start doing that knowledge exchange to find a route that works for them.
Yeah, and knowledge exchange is a really nice phrase, isn't it? And umbrella term to describe the different ways that, again, we can make impact, you know, through our discoveries. I'm going to end, Murray and Lily, on asking you sort of what your favourite example is. I mean, you've seen a lot of companies be created. Just a couple of examples of the ones that, you know, have stood out for you.
Yeah, so the thing that I really, really like, it gives me more job satisfaction than anything else, is when I'm going about my ordinary Oxfordshire life and then I see real tangible evidence of one of our companies actually doing something tangible in the world. So maybe it's going past their offices. I saw somebody in Woodstock Town last week with Yasser Motors across the back of their jacket. And, you know, Yasser was a spin-out company from 2008. It got bought by Mercedes-Benz in 2021. And they manufacture electric motors, and they're fabulous electric motors. They're going to the Mercedes all-electric powertrain. That's just a person probably walking to the shops or the pub or something. I don't know what he was doing, pick up his kids maybe. It can seem a bit esoteric maybe sometimes, this thing that we do, but actually if you open your eyes around our area, there's all sorts of hard evidence of these things really happening.
That's just wonderful to hear. I mean, that's how we can really make our presence be felt in a very positive way, I think, for our city and community, which I'm really keen that we do as a university. Lily, what's your sort of standout one?
Definitely can't be seen to her favourites.
Yeah, I know. I know, but come on.
to pick a very recent example, which is very exciting, is Caristo. Recently made the front page of the Times, broadsheet paper, for its prediction tool for heart disease, which is now being implemented across three very big NHS sites, including the Oxford University one. So getting into real patients.
Brilliant. Super. Well, what wonderful. Two really different examples. Well, I can't thank you enough, Mari and Lily, for joining me today. I'm excited about the journey that we're on together, and I'll do everything I can as Vice-Chancellor to support our collective ambitions around this space. I think we've got a really good and exciting journey ahead of us. And for the listeners out there, thank you for your time. I look forward to joining you next term for another exciting installation of Fire and Wire. But for now, we'll sign off. And Mari, Lily, thank you once again for joining me. And to everybody out there, have a wonderful festive break, and look forward to seeing you in 2024.